Anyway, welcome to Podcast on Fire 23. I was going to say 32, but no, we're not that far out of the woods yet. But yes, I'm your host, Stuart Sutherland, joined with Ken.
Hey.
And some... What's his name again?
Mike.
Oh, him, aye. Welcome back. Starting every show as we should, we're going with our last movies watched. I'm going to run with it this time quickly, just running through my past movies watched, because trust me, well, not trust me.
Now we know that Stu is a robot. His program got the
batteries ran out. I was going to run with it, then. I was basically going to run through my reviews really quickly, because for my planning, I have each of the movies I've seen and one word beside them on how I thought.
Effective?
Yep, because effectively I was just going to mention how I usually fuck everything up with the Marvel mouth, and what happened? I fucked it all up again. Anyway, my films this week have been Jianghu, Funeral March, Dreadnought, and Warriors 2. And to save your ears, I'm going to just... fucking hell! Damn you, Diet Coke!
You didn't save our ears by doing what you just did.
Okay.
That would make someone deaf.
Is my mic coming in too loud, or...?
No.
Because this is my new one, so I've...
It's fine.
I hear static, and I hear myself coming back into the headset. It's one of the ones where the mic's too close to the headphone.
That's no problem, Stuart. You're
fine. Okay, right. So, my movies this week... I've said that bit already. Oh, fuck. Maybe I need a week off.
And go into what the word that accompanied each...
Yep. Mm-hmm, but I spoke about that outside of the show. Well, out. Off mic.
Yes.
And realised we've been doing this. I haven't done our new 5 second silence bit. Bad, Stu. Bad, Stu. Okay. Compose yourself. So, my last movies watched include Jianghu, which I'll just describe as good film. Funeral March. Sad film. Dreadnought, fun. And Warriors 2, classic. My favourite old school Golden Harvest movie. Ken?
Well, in an effort to get this podcast to at least 10 minutes.
Shut up.
I'll talk about one movie. Recent movie called, very imaginative, the original title, Hong Kong Bronx. Produced by Wong Jing, directed by Billy Chung, starring Jordan Chan. This is your age-old triad movie with the hero that needs to leave a gangster world, but as the quote usually goes from Godfather 3, just when I thought I was out, they pull me back in. And that's what happened to Jordan Chan's character, who has been in prison for many years now and has matured to the point that he wants to leave the gangster world. He wants to take care of his sisters, but the world works against him, and it all comes to a bloody climax, basically. And it really is something you shouldn't look up consciously and try and seek out. But I like the recent streak of Wong Jing produced or written movies where he's been in the gangster genre, or at least done dark movies. Mm-hmm. Now, I have no interest in looking into, you know, Kung Fu Mahjong and My Wife is a Gambling Maestro and all those movies. And obviously Call of the Truth was good. He co-directed that one with Michael Mack. Call of mm-hmm. Loyalty co-directed with Billy Chung, who directed this one on his own. And it helps that the casting helps. It's mainly referring to Jordan Chan, who is the professional to the point that he takes this arc seriously, which is a very simple arc, and you know, brings that enough presence for this very simple tale, and it does nothing new, and you can really, you know, when writing a review about it, you can probably find a review of like any gangster movie with the same story and just replace the words of that movie title and inject Hong Kong Bronx instead, because you find yourself saying the absolute same things about it. But it's still a solid film thanks to Jordan Chan's performance, and you know, the category free bloodshed doesn't hurt either, until, and this is why this movie sinks in the last 10 minutes. Shot on video, I need to mention, which is not the worst thing about it, but the final bloody climax, this kind of Peter Jackson-esque gory climax, contains so much CGI blood and effects that it all turns incredibly dumb and fake, and it doesn't make any sense. There is no sense. The post-production crew sinks this film, and there's no final dramatic effect to the film that has been kind of interesting up to this point, and it looks completely fake. It looks like a computer game, but it's not. That's not a good thing. And it seems like whoever came up with the idea to do every effect in post-production, including, you know, squibs, gun hits, it's getting out of hand, and I don't know if Hong Kong cinema is solely responsible for this. I mean, I've seen it in Japanese cinema. Battle Royale, I think, had quite a lot of that, and other films. But it seems like overall, if you look at the cinema overall, I don't know why this cheapness has all of a sudden entered the arena. Because back in the day, the 80s movies and stuff in Hong Kong, cheap movies, but still, if blood needed to be visible, you know, they did it. They had the tools to do it. I mean, I don't think it's a money problem. I just think it's a weird time problem that translates into a really fake looking shit. And unfortunately, the Hong Kong Bronx is a, you know, it's a good film to abort just before the climax, and it really works despite, because you know there's a bloody climax, and you know that's it. But unfortunately, I think this movie won't discourage the likes of Wong Jing or other producers or filmmakers to make movies this CGI infested. And so it's a solid movie, and Jordan Chan is really he saves this movie for a large amount of times, because there's no other good cast in this, except I guess Timmy Hung is, you know, a known co-star, because he's the son of Sam Hung, and Wong Jing's dad appears in a supporting role as well. There's even a triad election scene, so obviously you think of Johnny To's election films being a small influence. But then again, you know, it's the gangster genre. It's been around for ages. So. Yeah, Hong Kong Bronx. Turn it off just before the climax.
Mike?
Well, seeing as I haven't been here for months now, I've got quite a few films that I've watched recently. unsurprisingly, they're all Shaw Brothers. Yeah, I'm on a run at the moment. Why bother breaking it? And so first up is Bloody Parrot.
Sweet.
Yeah, which has obviously got an awesome title. Well, I mean, the thing that binds all the three films that I'm going to speak about is that they're all swordplay. And so this is swordplay in the proper Wuxia sense, a proper kind of exploitative late Shaw Brothers sense as well. So it you know, crazy goings on, lots of kind of fantastical stuff, potions, old hags, ladies with their boobs out, decapitations, all that kind of stuff is going on.
Colourful.
Yep, it's incredibly confusing. but that's all part of it as well. I mean, the thing about it is, if you don't like the scene that you're watching, it doesn't matter, because that probably only lasts for 30 seconds, and then it'll be on to something else completely different. I think the plot is about the Bloody Parrot, which is some kind of weird mystical well, basically it's just a red light in the shape of a parrot that seems to like glow on stuff, and then possibly people die or some crazy shit happens. But there's some jewels of the Emperor, you know, pearls, all this kind of stuff, chests of it that disappear, and people think it's connected to the Bloody Parrot, or the Bloody Parrot has made things happen and it's gone missing and people are looking for it, and a prostitute, I've forgotten her name, is, but she's played by Jenny Liang, is kind of at the centre of everything, and there's an official that comes in to investigate, and Jason Pipew gets involved as well, and this kind of prostitute's got this old hag that looks after her who's mysterious and involved somehow. And like I said, it's all kind of confusing, but it doesn't really matter, I don't think, because it's just it's fast paced, tons of characters, lots of really good fight scenes, plenty of blood, plenty of deaths. And I'm going to say, a thing I have to mention as well is that Jenny Liang spends, I think she got a big break in Hong Kong Emmanuel, doing some, you know, softcore porn. And I'd say a good third of the time she's on screen, she's got her tits out. I mean, literally, there's one scene where, I mean, it starts off after the credits, freezing on a picture of her lying on her back with her boobs out. I mean, utterly gratuitous. Just that picture's on there for like about 5-10 seconds before the film starts. And then when you introduce to her character, she's got her boobs out, just hanging around talking to Jason. And then it kicks off into some kind of weird, hard to explain exorcist style possession of her body / fight scene where she's totally butt naked, and that lasts for a good few minutes. Yeah, and it just basically every time she's on screen, you know, at some point she's going to get naked. But even ingeniously, in a Hansel and Gretel style / Enter the Dragon, there's this bit where that she's in a like a cave, but it's full of mirrors, right? And so to like block the mirrors, and so she knows where she's been, like the breadcrumbs in Hansel and Gretel, she starts taking an item of clothing off and hanging it over a mirror. And obviously there's hundreds of mirrors, so eventually she's completely naked for the finale. I mean, that is genius screenwriting, if you ask me.
That is genius.
How can we get her naked? I mean, you know, a lesser screenwriter and creative type would have, you know, just had her clothes ripped off in a fight or something, or she was stripped naked ready for some kind of weird sacrifice. But no, they got really creative on that one, so I'm quite impressed. Yes, yeah, so it's like if you're happy not to be quite sure what's going on, but just enjoying lots of crazy shit being thrown at the screen, then I definitely recommend Bloody Parrot. I've got a feeling it's the kind of film that would do a lot better on a second viewing when you kind of know what's going to happen. Do you know what I mean?
You could go on tick count.
Piece everything together. But yep.
Yeah, you're probably looking at the poster, which I am now, and it seems, you know, serious enough. You know, the two swordplay heroes at center, there is a parrot on the poster, and there's some weird evil witch, but you know, it doesn't sound... I could very well imagine that you're not quite ready for it, and but it's a good thing that you probably want to see it again then.
Yeah.
That is memorable in that to that extent, apparently. It's made in the beginning of the 80s, if I'm not mistaken. So it's during the last few Shaw Brothers years.
Yeah, well, in the early 80s, Jason Pipew kind of was in a lot of the Shaw Brothers films at that time. He was kind of like their last generation leading man.
Yeah.
So he did quite a few films like Supreme Swordsman as well.
He was. I remember he was good in Shadowing Prince. He was the villain in that. And I don't remember more about that film other than he was in it, and I thought he was good, but I don't remember the specifics of that performance.
I think with the tash on, he reminds me of Chen Quan Tai.
Yeah, exactly.
Just in the looks department. So yeah, that's kind of a good film. I definitely recommend that. And then upgrading, we have Black Tavern, which is another Shaw Brothers film. This one's from 1972. And it's not exactly filled with stars, but it does have Shizu and Kufeng, who's always awesome value for money. And this is a cracking film. I had a definite recommendation on this one. Really simple story, which is set really nicely, actually. It starts off in winter in a tavern where people are all gathering, you know, possibly shady looking types, people in costumes holding swords, everything. And then a beggar goes round singing a song, trying to kind of get some free food, but singing a song and telling a story and setting the scene of how there's an official in town driving past in his car with big boxes full of jewels, and that it'll probably be really easy to nick it. And that's how they set. That's the simple scene set, but it's really nicely done, quite elegant. And then that's basically the story. That there's another inn that he's going to be travelling to, and so all these kind of evil doers and people who are itching to rob him of all his jewels start going to stay at this place. And so you have Kufeng kind of in situ there with his henchmen, and then more and more zany characters just turn up, and there's all kinds of scraps and action and some little twists, and it's pretty tense for 72. Some really good action, some nice hand-to-hand stuff, and plenty of weapons work. Kufeng is the whip master, which is just awesome. And so my favourite move of his is where he whips a whip around somebody's neck and then pops their head off like a champagne cork. Which he does a few times. So there's plenty of violence, plenty of blood, lots of really good action. And like I said, lots of just kind of eccentric characters popping in. But it just kind of ratchets it up, starts off nice and slowly, and then more and more turn up and more action happens and allegiances kind of switch. A really simple story, but really nicely done. I thought that was a really good kind of a title that's not really spoke of much, even in kind of Shaw Brothers fan kind of circles, but it's a cracker.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at the cast list here, Mike, and I don't know if I'm discouraging you to watch the film again, but it says here that the fourth leading man, or fourth leading actor, is Dean Shek.
Mm-hmm.
He apparently plays the wandering monk, according to the Hong Kong Movie Database, or is that a minute role?
No, that's him. That's the beggar that starts the everything off with the musical number and everything. And pops up a few of the times.
You bastard. I wasn't expecting that. Come on, I was drinking.
Oh, he's good. I mean, it's
way before he got the idea to form Cinema City and stuff like that and be and piss his pants during Warriors 2. It's way before that.
He's not at all irritating. I'd have to say, comfortably, his best performance. I mean, you know, he hasn't got a massive mole on his face. And he's not being incredibly annoying. So it's all good.
And apparently directed by a guy called Teddy Yip, which I recognized instantly. The face is this kind of fairly heavyset guy with a mustache that turns up in tons of films. And you all know when you see him who he is, but apparently he directed, you know, a few movies with Blade Spares None, I believe it's a Golden Harvest film, something like that. And this one, he's one of those guys that appears as doing a little bit of everything, including bit acting mostly.
It didn't register with me. I know who you're talking about, because obviously on the DVD it says Ye Young Soo, which obviously would be the Mandarin name, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And it probably says that on the print too. Obviously not Teddy. I mean, that sounds stupid. Meet director Teddy.
Yeah, but yeah, I know you're on about. I think he works on a quite a few Shaw Brothers films.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the filmography here, I don't know which one are Shaw Brothers, but he directed The Blade Spares None, The Eunuch, Black Talon, then Deathblow, Chinese Tiger, Thunder Kick, Bloody Ring. Bloody Ring.
Well,
Bloody
he appears Bloody in a few Samo films as well, doesn't he?
That's probably where I recognize him.
Millionaire's Express, I think.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's that streak of 80s movies where you just recognize him from. I mean, even People's Hero, he plays a bank customer, which has a fairly large role because there are, you know, when they are trapped in the bank, he's one of those people that are left. So, instantly recognizable, but maybe not the name Teddy Yip, and certainly not as a director. So it's a cool thing to know he directed a Shaw Brothers film, even. Which would rank as sort of a large thing for anyone, especially 1972, which would have been a height for Shaw Brothers, like a continuing height.
So yeah, so definitely, well, I wouldn't say revelatory, but Dean Shek in not irritating Shocker. So if you want to see a Dean Shek film where he's not incredibly irritating, you don't want to punch the screen, then definitely check that one out. And then thirdly, moving on, we've got Clan Feuds, which is
what is now, that about?
Yeah, I watched it assuming that it was, because I mean, I get to know things about the films, but I do my best not to know even like who's in the films, Shaw Brothers usually, or anything about the story, because I like just putting a film on and, you know, being surprised and enthralled when I watch it. And so I'd assumed that it was directed by Choi Yun, seeing as, you know, Wuxia film, it's about clans, it's got D-Lung in it, Shaw Brothers. I think it's a fair assumption to make, but apparently it's the it's Cheng Ping Yi, who was known as the Taiwanese Choi Yun. And kind of yeah, so it's got D-Lung, Lo Mung, Lily Lee, and it's absolutely brilliant film. I loved it. Rocketing up there as one of my favourite Shaw Brothers films. I mean, it's classic. It'd be classic Choi Yun if it was him, because, you know, clans, rival schools, rival clans, and all that kind of stuff going on. There's you know, missing treasure or a fabled kung fu manual that it, people trying to get over hold of. There's characters flying in left, right, and centre. It's tons of characters, but loads of really good action and a really fine performance by D-Lung, and yeah, it's just excellent. I thoroughly recommend it. I mean, there's no point in trying to explain the plot to you because it's just far too complicated.
And these movies kind of, you know, develop all up till, you know, the final minutes. You know, if the 30th twist in the story occurs late. So, I mean, you would have to explain the whole movie, possibly.
So. Oh, yeah. But, yeah, the final twist is good. It's definitely worth having all the other twists building up to it. And it's delivered nicely. The standard of acting throughout is good. It kind of, you know, it's got a bit of emotional weight to it as well.
What do you think in general, Mike, about, I mean, speaking of Choi Yun and these kind of Wuxias that he made tons of, did it come and go in terms of quality? I mean, did he, you know, run on autopilot after a while, Choi Yun, or you in general, like, you know, the stuff from Killer Clans to Roving Swordsman or what have you?
Yeah, I think all the Choi Yun films I've seen, I've really enjoyed. I mean, he's definitely got a certain style. And obviously, he was doing Gulong novels all the time, which allegedly he kind of got bored of doing. He was getting, you know, kind of typecast as the man that does the Gulong stories.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you read that in reviews, you know, the closer you get to the 80s and into the 80s, that it sort of is standard, and I've seen a few and it feels standard compared to sort of a great reference work like Killer Clans, which is really good. That is creative in the most in the best of ways. And I mean, Choyun to me is a visual stylist too, which shows, you know, to great effect, to standard effect as well, depending on the movie.
Yeah, but I haven't come across a Choyun film that I've really disliked or haven't found some enjoyment from. I mean, as you can say, they get kind of possibly repetitive, obviously because of the similar kind of source material. But I mean, the man did Intimate Confessions of a Chinese Courtesan and Death Duel.
Yeah.
Which just two of the coolest, not Shaw Brothers, but Kung Fu movies ever made. I think we've mentioned it before on the show, but Death Duel's just got the best ending, I think, of any Kung Fu film.
And I'll be damned, I can't even remember, to be honest. I remember David Chang was in it really briefly.
Yeah. David Chang.
Yeah, for once, really, really insane. They had to keep him in a box. Obviously, he escaped that easily. Because in these movies, all you have to do is do whatever you do to make boxes explode in all kinds of directions. Seems fairly easy. When we feel like it, towards the end.
Right, so our questions for this week. Maren asks us, how do you guys choose what films to buy? Are they always recommended either by a friend or a website? Do you choose by actor or director? Or sometimes blind buys, i.e. you don't know anything about it, but it sounds good or the cover art looks cool. What do you think, Ken?
Probably a mixture of all, but looking at what movies I choose for, you know, the quote-unquote big reviews at my site, I tend to do the kind of actor-director process there. But it's also, you know, anything that stirs, you know, my instincts a little bit. You know, this sounds slightly good. I'll try it on, and I know sort of that I can probably write, you know, a bigger review on this rather than quick take. So I do follow directors, even though, you know, reviews are less than stellar. I'm reviewing the Andy Lau film Brothers in a few weeks, which is directed by a guy called Derek Chu, which has done some quite marvelous films. But this didn't get too much good reviews. So it's kind of people I like to follow, and there's new directors out there also that it's probably unknown stuff, and new directors is the kind of stuff that gets me going, that I want to write about, because it's fun to highlight, even though in a very minute way, movies that people necessarily don't think about when thinking about a certain director, or movies that they don't think about at all and will never, because it's underground, it's cult movies, if you will, and stuff like that. So and you know, cover art can look cool and stuff, but I generally have a good idea of what's coming out, and I have my sets, my aim already like set. So regardless of the cover art that comes out of a particular movie, it really has to be something extremely dumb and weird, and you know, throw a couple of tits on the cover and a category 3 label, I'm there. So I mean, cause I guess if you put something naughty on the cover, then I'll definitely pick it up regardless of what it is. So I mean, your theory as a few podcasts ago, Mike, it is true. I look at the rating and I look at the covers.
And see if rape's in the title.
Well, yeah. Yep.
Tried to back paddle, but I said, oh, fuck it, why no?
Well, sometimes you are surprised. I'm actually going to talk about a horror movie later that has a rape in the title, but it's not rape in that the normal sense. It's sort of a Rosemary's Baby.
Well, for me, there's not the thing for buying a movie through cast. It's usually films that would include Eakin Cheng, Chain Carlock, Sammo, Stephen Chow, or Jackie Chan and Eason Chan. Usually, if
He has a curveball all of a sudden, like Samo, Jackie, Ethan.
Mm-hmm. I made a little list. I just tried to think of it. Well, I just had to make a little list. It looked fun at the time.
Damn, Jackie.
And for directors, it seems to be a trio. So it's either anything by Edmund Pang, Wilson Yip, and Johnny Toe. If one of them fires a movie out there, I'll buy it. Because there was, well, for me, it has a sense, like a reliable, like, I could trust these people to make a good movie.
Yeah, they've proven that too, even though when they're at the, you know, when they make slightly lesser movies. I mean, it was mm-hmm. Triangle recently, which, you know, was three directors and stuff, but Johnny Toe's segment, for instance, wasn't, you know, the best of Johnny Toe.
Mm-hmm.
It was good. It was quite solid. It was even funny, but it's watchable despite. So, you know, as you said, there is some guarantee.
Mm-hmm.
It's not expensive either. I mean, Hong Kong DVDs still are kept at a fairly low price in general.
Yeah.
So it's always been, you always had the opportunity to try out so much.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the newer releases are more, you know, they're approaching, you know, the 80 to Hong Kong dollar limit. Once upon a time, you could always get everything for like 40 Hong Kong dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Buy, you know, a truckload of DVDs. Not watch them for 5 years.
Yeah.
You all know what that's like. You know, you all know what I'm talking about.
What about you, Mike?
Well, as far as choosing by the actual director, then currently it'd probably only be Jackie Chan and Tony Jaa that mm-hmm. I'll just buy something regardless of what the review's like, or, you know, what the film's about, or who's in it. I'd buy any new releases by either of those two. Case in point, Robbie Hood heard, like, you know, fairly negative reviews, bought it, it was pretty shit. You know, Jackie Chan, and obviously Tony Jaa, you know, I'll be getting Long Back 2 as soon as it's out, subbed or not, doesn't matter.
You're going through these old ones that he appeared in, that director made like 10 years before Ong Bak. Are you going through those as well?
This kind of puts me onto another point, actually. I mean, on this question, it says, you know, recommendation from a friend website, choose by actor director, spline by. There's an extra section for me, or option, which is buying stuff which is kind of similar to other things I like. So, for example, non-Asian related, years back, when Lord of the Rings was on its way, and there was trailers and photos all over the place, but it hadn't been released, I was super pumped for that film. Couldn't wait to see it. You know, it looked awesome from the trailers, and you've got, you know, people with swords, fantasy magic, dragons, all that kind of shit. It's bound to give me a bit of a Woody. So, because I was all pumped for this, and it was still months away, there was Dungeons and Dragons had just come out of the cinema. So me and my couple of friends went to see Dungeons and Dragons, which was an absolute pile of shite. I mean, really bad.
I don't even remember that coming out, so it's probably now buried.
Oh, it was anus. I mean, I don't think you'll get this, Ken, but when the best thing in the film is Richard O'Brien doing a sub Crystal Maze performance, you know the film's bad. I mean, Richard O'Brien is the guy who created the Rocky Horror Show.
Okay.
But he was famous for doing a Channel 4 quiz called The Crystal Maze, which had people mm-hmm. in this, like, really weird and elaborate indoor kind of setup with all kinds of big physical and mental tasks to do. And they had to get a crystal at the end of it, and they'd win some kind of crappy prize at the end. But Richard O'Brien would present it, but also was in character, like this was his kind of like house that he owned, and his mum lived somewhere, and he'd do a little aside to the camera, which is already good. But yeah, anyway, Dungeons and Dragons was absolutely crud. So, to get back to the Asian films, when Tony Jaa was kicking ass, you know, and I was loving Ong Bak, couldn't get enough of it. Tom Yung-gung was on the way, I think. I started buying all the Panaritacry, who's obviously the action director of Ong Bak and Tony's films and Tony's mentor. So I was buying all his old films, which weren't subtitled. So I bought as many as I could get hold of and watched tons of those. So I've got films that are kind of related to people I like in the vague hope that they'd be good.
Mm-hmm.
So in front of me right now, I have sitting a film. I don't know anything about it, but I'd heard the guy who was the lead in it was quite good. I can't remember his name. I mean, it looks cool. It's got one of those Thai painted covers with all, like, you know, girls in bikinis, an exploding helicopter, car chase, geezers with guns. I mean, it's all good stuff. But the film is absolutely shocking. There's absolutely nothing to recommend about it. And I ended up spending like £5 getting this VCD. Absolute rubbish. And then, this is kind of another one that's not on here. It's kind of two for one, this one. It's kind of related because it's a Thai action film, an early one. But it's also got a really wicked cool cover. I can't get enough of the old painted posters.
IFD and Filmark was sort of the same. They did this really cool posters that suggested ultra action mayhem, you know, exploding helicopters and guns everywhere and girls. And when you look at it, it's kind of not.
With the old, I think obviously before Photoshop. And how easy it is now to whip together a, you know, cool, in, you know, in commas, cover.
Mm-hmm.
You know, video companies in the UK used to do tons of painted front covers for films. I've got an old copy of Project A, UK VHS, which has got a wicked cover. The cover's so good. I don't even need the video anymore because I've got about 5 copies of Project A. But I'm still going to keep it because the front cover's so awesome. But anyway, so I bought this one.
It's a lost art. Yeah, sorry.
Because it's got, like, you know, it's got two Thai blokes, one bare-chested with big swords. It's got two chicks, both with big swords. And it's got, like, a village exploding in the background. I mean, who wouldn't want to watch that film? I ask you. So I bought that, and it was rubbish. I mean, the ladies in it are very attractive. That's pretty much the only plus point I can think of. Yeah, so that's kind of movies that are related to stuff that I actually like, but aren't
quite
the same.
Is it fun or even possible to track some sort of here it began and what led to Ong Bak, or is it's too vague content for that?
Well, from the Panna ones, the Panaritacry ones, definitely, because you can just tell by watching it, he is just a proto Tony Jaa. He's Tony Jaa who never actually got the break to do a decent budget film. I mean, it's crazy. He's got all the kind of stunts, the flips, the Muay Thai, and also all the debate that was going about Tony Jaa, you know, is that all he can do? Can he do Kung Fu? Can he do the fast exchanges? All that kind of stuff. I mean, I always knew he'd be able to do it because you just watch Panna pulling out the snake style and doing the weapons forms and all kinds of stuff, Kung Fu style, in one of his films, then you just know Tony's got it within him. Yeah, so I do that, and then Blind Buy, which is kind of the same as what I do with these Thai films. Yeah, if the covers look really good, then I sometimes blind buy stuff. And in the past, I went through just buying Sammo and Yuen Biu films. I mean, there's a few I haven't got yet, but those are ones that I kind of have heard are a bit rubbish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's you know, most of the stuff, if you're looking at the 80s, are kind of sure bets in a way, if you're talking about Sammo, for instance. But, you know, it's fun to go back to like early 70s Golden Harvest films to watch the way Sammo appeared in those films, either as action director or, you know, a supporting goon.
Mm-hmm.
Which he did in a movie I saw recently called Devil's Treasure. She has he plays a Japanese assassin, and he has a wicked moustache, and he laughs, you know, like good henchmen do. It's kind of fun to do that as well, because, you know, it's not unbearable to start there and then track the development through the 70s and 80s. It's easy enough to get through, which I imagine is the same with the Thai stuff. It's not a chore to look for, you know, the possible good stuff. It's kind of fun.
Well, there's always that just kind of feeling that you might just unearth a classic, a lost classic. That's kind of why I bought the one with the people with swords on the front, because I was hoping for some kind of old school Thai kind of like a kung fu film. And just the idea that maybe it might just be, you know, a rough diamond, or a diamond in the rough even. It wasn't. Also, actually, adding to that thing, the question, I buy by studio as well, obviously. Because I just buy Shaw Brothers films. I mean, my aim in one day is probably to have every Shaw Brothers film that's been released. Kind of by Celestial. But at the moment, I'm just working my way through all the best action films I can get hold of. Then it'll be onto the second tier action, and then onto just dramas and stuff eventually.
Operas?
Indeed. Oh. I take them all, I just love Shaw Brothers.
Okay, well, moving on to our second question. Baron asks us, Japan and Korea have just had a big phase of horror films, some good, some shite, but can you name any genuinely scary Hong Kong films? Don't say Dragon Squad. For me, the first one that comes to my mind is Inner Senses. That's quite an unnerving film. Although, sure, some of the effects are CG. CG-fied, but they look a bit iffy, the effects, when it was the case of opening the cabinet in the bathroom. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I've seen it. Would you mind explaining briefly what the film is for those who don't know?
I can't remember much of it myself.
Well,
I was just quite like, scary film.
It's the last Les Chung film.
Yes.
Is that the sound of you being scared, Stu?
Like, oh no.
I don't want to talk about it. Too much.
That was the only sound you heard when The Ring came on in the cinema. And the door slamming. But anyway, yes, Inner Senses was the last film of Leslie Cheung, and I think maybe it has more of an unnerving feeling because that is his last film. When you watch it, the character he plays, isn't he in the right state of mind half the time? He's away with it, and it just looks too convincing.
Yeah, he's kind of scarily into it. I agree. That it is a good film. He is good in it. But yeah, it's you can definitely see some damage in there, some hurt.
And another thing I thought of when it came, when it's supposed to be horror in Hong Kong films, I think some people may look towards the Pang brothers, because they sort of hit it big with The Eye. And then after that, it's kind of been hit or misses, because Recycle was just weird. Forest of Death seemed more like a sci-fi film than a horror. I think the only one that kind of done well out of it was Diary, the film starring Charlene Joy, Isabella Leong, and Sean Yu, like 2 years ago.
Did you see that film?
Yeah.
I mean, it was approaching more of the horror stuff.
It was a darker film.
Thank you.
If I could interrupt for a sec, if you know,
okay.
Lost words. I was gonna say, has Hong Kong really got much? I mean, obviously, virtually all movie, you know, production around the world in different countries has got their own horror films, but has Hong Kong really got that many horror films?
Funnily enough, I don't think so, because I looked through a database today in prep for the podcast and sort of divided it by genre and just going strictly by horror and not rating like category 3. There's really very few ones that are, you know, straight horrors. really few ones.
Obviously Mr. Vampire, and I've seen some comedy horror ones from Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Hopping Vampires and everything, but I can't really think of that many
genuine
straight horror films.
Aye.
Exactly. I think it is the case that they've not really dabbled in the creepy, trying to be creepy and trying to provide an atmosphere. There are a few ones. I would say a director that tried that out a few moments was the director Soi Chung, who is now known for Dog Bite Dog, Shamo. But I liked the two horror movies he did, especially the one called Horror Hotline, Big Head Monster. Which is, it is a silly story, but he's sort of like, I know it's a silly story, but I'm going to try to make this as creepy as I can. And he sort of succeeds quite well. It has a bit of a crap ending, but I like the fact that he tried to make something as silly sounding as that film sort of creepy and atmospheric, and it continued quite nicely in the movie New Blood that he did afterwards. So Chang has been one of these like new generation filmmakers that has tried that out. He's now doing different genres with, you know, Dog Bite Dog, Love Battlefield was really good, and Shamo, which I yet to see, the manga adaptation with Shaw Hugh and Francis.
Do you think it's because in general people in Hong Kong haven't got a big taste for horror, or is it because, say, like, you know, Japan's got that genre by the ass in Asia and has produced so many that, you know, they just get their horror films from Japan?
It's a mixture, probably. I mean, the commercial interest, you know, when Hong Kong hit it big with something, they run with it. Case in point, Mr. Vampire. I don't think anyone wanted to go into something that probably has a genre, straight horror, that had never had, you know, success. Because I don't think anyone can say, like a 70s movie or 80s movie, that was the pinnacle, the best horror movie that came out of the 80s. There are a few here and there, but they are small films. The movie I touched upon, which is a very unknown movie called The Rape After, which is sort of based on the Rosemary's Baby plot, but that tries to echo like Italian horror sensibilities with very stylized cinematography and completely straight mood and some really well done physical effects and monster effects and stuff, but it's too small, and it's an infrequency in the genre. So yeah, it's not Hong Kong's thing, and after The Ring, you know, took off, it became Hong Kong's thing, but it was a Xerox copy of a Xerox copy of a Xerox copy, because everyone, including Hong Kong, did the long haired girl film, and Japan obviously did it, Korea did it, America did it, they redid it. So yeah, it's the Eye is a good example though, which I was going to mention, because that is a favorite of mine, because it's a kind of emotional horror, and by that I mean it's scary. There are a couple of scenes out there where I really freaked out when first watching The Eye. It took me by surprise in a genuine way, but it also, in the case of that story, it's kind of emotional, because this is a character that is seeing things, and she's genuinely scared. And I've never felt that really with horror movies. I think a movie that came out around the time in Japan called Dark Water. I sort of felt the same thing. There was a drama element there, and it's kind of the horror that I've appreciated during the last few years. Maybe there are a few more reference works in that regard that is, you know, good quality, high quality. But I have a feeling that, you know, when The Eye came out, obviously people wanted to echo The Eye, which in itself was an echo slightly of the Sixth Sense, and I guess Dark Water and Ring and all that had the same effect. That, you know, it's hard to find the reference works out there. So yeah, I guess The Eye and that movie, The Rape After, is for me like genuinely scary Hong Kong films.
Have either of you seen Abnormal Beauty?
No, not yet, actually. No.
That's one of the Pang... One of the Pang brothers. This is when they done the two films. One done Leave Me Alone and the other one done Abnormal Beauty. And they kind of cut in between each other at one moment during both films.
I haven't seen that. I heard some decent reviews of it. Went into like a category of resensibilities that was unexpected because it starred pop stars.
Yeah, because this one is basically it's sort of like a stalker horror type film where she's finding videotapes are being sent to her of, from what I can remember, I think it was people she's met or just maybe it could just be strangers being tortured and killed. And that film, that was sort of the film where they're biting on your nails watching it, but it kind of just, like, it just became more drama towards the end and kind of went to an obvious ending. It's like, oh, well, you kind of realised who done it after the first 10 minutes. It wasn't the case of the person just stops and the camera zooms up to him and goes, It wasn't like that.
I was going to say, I don't really get scared when watching films. I mean, I like a good horror. I mean, it's not some kind of like macho thing of, yeah, not bothering me. But I genuinely just don't particularly get scared.
I don't piss my pants like you do.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm not scared of little girls with long black hair. I work with them.
Yeah, well, I mean, I watched The Ring. And I enjoyed it, kind of as a bit of a thriller. But even when, you know, girl pops through the TV screen and stuff, it looks fucking cool. But it didn't have me kind of creeped out or anything. I'm kind of more your gore fan when it comes to horror films. I like seeing some nasty shit on screen if I'm going to be watching a horror film. Usually the bloodier the better.
You should watch the recent Ha Man Yao film Gong Dao, An Oriental Black Magic. That breaks rule. That breaks taboos, and it doesn't feature the killing of a baby, but it features the aftermath of what happened to that baby. So if you want your something hardcore,
well, Ichi the Killer is my ultimate favorite hardcore film at the moment. I mean, that's done with a little bit of tongue in cheek and kind of comedy, a bit like, you know, most Takashi Miike films, but that's just got scene after scene of some really fucked up shit. I really like it.
What is it, like the nipple slicing and wonderful stuff like that?
Amongst other things, there's just all kinds of crazy torture and sadomasochism in that one.
Okay, Scott asks us, what era and studio of sound effects from Kung Fu movies do you like? E.g. Golden Harvest / Independent or Shaw's? That's a pretty strange question. I think Scott's thrown us an oddball, but
it's a challenge.
He's thrown us a Scott ball.
For me, I think.
And you have to illustrate audio wise also. Go ahead and try. I like this one and this one.
Well, I was thinking more towards the sound effects you get when it comes to the animal styles. Like in Knockabout, where it was the monkey style and it'd come in with the sound effects.
That absolutely and the same goes for my head in.
Now, see, I found this weird. When watching films with friends, I noticed they liked the sound effects they used in Snake and Eagle Shadows, but hated the sound effects in Knockabout. They're all animal sounds.
I didn't know there was monkey style in Knockabout. I haven't seen it, but I didn't get that impression. Or it's just a minor...
They'll do the moves, then it will just stop, you know, the, like a wee monkey impression where he scratches his head and they just have the sound effect of a battered monkey.
Yeah, but it's the same sound effect. It's not different sound effects of monkey. It's one... It's got like a kind of sound, right? Screechy thing. But it's the same one. And it's like, he does a move, he does that stupid sound effect, then that stupid sound effect, then he rolls around, then that stupid sound effect.
Then him and Sam will do it at the same time.
Well, they what? Didn't have new Foley artists each and every movie. They had the library of sound and ran with it. It's probably the same in Mad Monkey Kung Fu. I don't remember there was a constant usage of it, but obviously sometime they must have used a monkey sound.
I think it was always more of the sort of when they does the sort of the whistle face, where it kind of makes a whistle sound. That's a vague, because I ain't seen the film in years, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't a proper monkey. It was more like a sound he made himself.
Oh, but either way, it doesn't stand out to me as being annoying. It was definitely far more tolerable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Knockabout did do my head in. Snake in the Eagle Shadows, alright. I think, in terms of sound effects.
Mm-hmm. An interesting note is, have either of you seen Forbidden Kingdom yet?
No.
I started watching it on my girlfriend's laptop, because her friend had downloaded it for her. But there wasn't any English subtitles. I mean, it serves me right for watching a film illegally.
Yep.
But, you know, mm-hmm. Yeah. I got 40 minutes in until I couldn't understand what was going on in some key plot points, so I couldn't watch anymore.
Despite it being in English?
Yeah, well, the characters still speak in Mandarin to each other.
Oh, okay.
There was one whole section where only, you know, when they're talking to the English kid do they speak in English. When they're talking to each other, or they're all Chinese, then they speak in Mandarin.
That was a revolutionary thought.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I thought that was pretty cool, actually.
Coming mm-hmm. from mainstream American cinema.
Well, what Will say is, have you seen it, Stu?
No, I'm saving out for the cinema release.
Yeah, me too now. Have you seen it, Ken?
No, it's not out here, and obviously the Hong Kong DVD is not worth buying. I think it's only in Chinese, but anyway.
Right, well, watch.
Yeah.
I've checked the first 40 minutes, and the choreography is fucking amazing.
Mm-hmm. I've heard good reviews.
Wu-Ping, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, just beautiful. I mean, some of the best Yuen Wu-Ping work I've ever seen.
But am I right in saying you'll know what I mean when there's the fight scene between Jackie and Jet, and was it Jet Li using a tiger style, and they used sound effects when doing the moves?
You know what? I don't actually remember there being any sound effects.
Right, well, I saw it was sort of like a YouTube video where they'd combine three different clippings from the same fight and put it together, and whenever, you know, in the usual Kung Fu movie when they do the strong arm movements and it makes a swipe sound. In this one they do a swipe, but it's mixed in with the sound of a tiger. It's subtle, it's not just like rawr! My tiger impression, but you just caught there. It's like, what was that animal? Tiger. So they have it subtly put in with the arm sound effects. You can't see here, but I'm trying to do like swinging arm moves.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, I think you're right there.
But they've done it really well, and it still looks like he's kicked it back to like the old school. I've heard there's been like a lot of old school references to Shaw Brothers. Like the guy's done his work. I'm actually really looking forward to seeing it.
It seems like the Stuart Little director is not as dopey as one would think.
Well, mm-hmm. To be fair, the man was the co-director of The Lion King as well.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, you mock, but that is a good film.
Of course it is.
That is a good film.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really good flick. But yeah, it looks amazing. Peter Pau's cinematography is great. Costumes, excellent. Special effects, great. And Jet Li Jackie Chan fight that I saw, it started off really slow, and I thought it had ended. And I was like, yeah, well, I wasn't getting my hopes up, so I wasn't disappointed, because I didn't think it was going to be up to much. But then they just go for a second round, and it's amazing. So good, so fast. Choreo's amazing. Jackie looks awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I can't wait to see it on the cinema.
And it goes to show that sometimes you are wrong, because I and probably many others thought that, they're going to make it an event of Jackie and Jet fighting each other, but it's going to be within an American style,
yeah.
Sort of. And they hide Yuen Woo-Ping, and that's just something they can put on the posters. They're not giving him any actual power and shit. But it seems I would be happy to be proven wrong.
Yes.
And it sounds like that they are giving fans something and not just, you know,
mm-hmm.
the general American audiences everything they want. And that's a hard balance, I think, to give the hardcore whiny geeks like myself something and to make a profit at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, well, I was about to say, I think from what I've seen so far, hopefully the rest of the film can, you know, keep the same standard. It's kind of got a feeling of old school kung fu mixed mm-hmm. with new wave, you know, Jet Li stuff and Drunken Master 2, but we also with kind of, you know, the skill and slickness and production value and everything of a Hollywood film. It's kind of pretty much the best of everything that I'd want to see in a kung fu flick, so I'm super hyped for the rest of that.
Cool. Mm-hmm. It's probably not going to be a cinema viewing for me. I don't think it's going to play anywhere near here, but as soon as a proper language DVD comes out, because I think the Hong Kong DVD, at least as advertised, only had Chinese language tracks. But maybe it's maybe it's mixed, because I didn't know up till now that it actually contained Mandarin language sections.
Yeah, well, it started off with a bit of Mandarin when the kids dropped in China, but I figured, and there wasn't any subs, but I figured it was kind of, the idea was you weren't supposed to know what they were saying because you were in his position, he doesn't know what's going on, etc., etc. But then it got to a bit later on where there's obviously a key plot point going, where the main bad guy's talking to his henchmen, but it's all in Mandarin. The whole scene was in Mandarin, so I was like, that's pretty cool, actually. And Jackie and Jet Li have a few exchanges I saw as well, totally in Mandarin.
Right.
I agree, is quite rather grown up and rather I don't know if the word would be respectful, but it's nice to see anyway from a Hollywood film.
Yeah, it's always some
treatment of Chinese a Chinese film.
There's always some studio execs that's going to protest even against, you know, minor scenes that have to contain subtitles, but studio executives or people involved, they think they are talking for the people. But in reality, I think people are much more tolerant than giving credit for.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon being case in point.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, this is a weird question. Thanks, Scott. I mean, I don't usually notice kung fu kind of, you know, Foley effects. Occasionally when it's like, sometimes you get those films where it sounds like somebody's punching a drum when they're punching somebody's face. Mm-hmm. You know, I always think to yourself, you know, somebody getting hit in the face doesn't sound like that. Somebody getting kicked doesn't sound like that. But that's not the point, is it? Because if you had the real sounds, then it wouldn't be as exciting,
be as
it would
effective
make impact, so you need the stupid over the top kind of sounds and all that kind of stuff. And also on the flip side, when you get a film that doesn't use the over the top sound effects for a fight scene, somehow it gives it more kind of realism and makes it more hardcore to me, gives it more impact. I think it's Once Upon a Time in China, the Korean, known Once Upon a Time in High School, the Korean film, I think it's also
right.
called The Spirit of Jeet Kune Do, has got possibly the best fight scene I've ever seen in a film. And that one doesn't have any of the kind of over the top sound effects. It's all very realistic, the whole fight's very realistic, and it's all the better for it, in contrast to how fight scenes are normally done. But to sort of answer Scott's question, when I was a kid, I used to love this, well, I still love it now, but I used to play it all the time with my friend, a game called IK Plus, which stands for International Karate, and then it's International Karate Plus. Now, this game was a piece of genius. It's three kind of karate guys, two players can control two of them, one's always the computer, side-scrolling. The idea is to get 6 points before the time ends, and you get points, different amount of points for, you know, a punch, kick to the face, a clean hit, that kind of stuff. It's a great game, really simple. But what it's got is some of the sound effects either totally stolen or aped from Enter the Dragon. Now, I knew all the sound effects from this before I watched Enter the Dragon. And so when I watched Enter the Dragon, I was like, whoa, hey, that's from IK Plus. And so every time I watch it, all I can think of is IK Plus now. They always make me laugh. And my absolute favourite is the one where Bruce is fighting at the beginning. Is it the beginning? No, it's one of the tournament fights. Does he hit the guy in the nuts, if I remember rightly? And he goes...
like a scalded dog.
Yeah, like a scalded dog. And that was the one where if you drop to your knees and punch somebody in the gut, they would, on IK Plus, they would fall to the floor with a pained expression holding their stomach and go... And I love that sound effect. So I got to say, Enter the Dragon. That's those are my favourite Foley effects from a fight scenes ever.
Mm-hmm.
Probably because it's got more of a nostalgia kind of thing to it. But I just love the sounds anyway. It's ace. It's got some real 70s style.
Gave me one wonderful trip down memory lane when talking about IK Plus. I don't remember it as specifically as you do because I in terms of sound effects and stuff. But you know, you played IK Plus, and it was a fun upgrade from the regular International Karate game. You know,
yeah, it's awesome.
The sequel now it's free. It's plus.
Yeah.
It means well, free.
Just a little side note, just for you, Ken. On the Commodore 64, some hackers a few years ago released a version, an upgraded version, called IK Plus Gold, which allows three humans to control the three characters.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Which is radical. If I could have had that when I was a kid, I would have fucking loved it. Three player IK Plus. That's what I dreamed
of.
I think I played it
on the Amiga. I think.
Yeah, me too. And on my friend's Atari ST.
Right.
But we're kind of totally off topic here. But yeah, you've got to have a little search for that, Stu. I'm sure you'll be able to find it on a torrent or on some kind of site.
Right.
Just get some of the sound effects from IK Plus and play them in during the conversation, maybe.
Well, Scott obviously has, you know, studied studios, sound effects and stuff, and I haven't. I can only think of, like stuff I really know of and I really... like when I hear it, and it's kind of the stuff you hear in Drunken Master and Snake and Eagle Shadow. The way you describe it, Stu, the swipe.
Mm-hmm.
I can't really think of anything else because it's never gotten that far into my very minute brain anyway, so it's, yeah, I appreciate the kind of over-the-top effects, but I can't really say I have a favorite aside from the stuff I hear in Drunken Master and Snake and Eagle Shadow. So I guess I don't know if that applies to other seasonal movies,
mm-hmm.
like Ninja and the Dragon's Den and stuff like that, but yeah, that's the only thing I can think of.
Okay.
I can think of one sound effect from, this is a particular new wave thing, which was just overused far too much and can be a little bit annoying, I think. It's when somebody's doing a big jump, a big wire thing, usually in slow-mo, and they have their clothes, or maybe a cape or something, going... kind of sound, where it's all flapping around in slow-mo. Now, maybe I'm on my own here, but I've heard that sound effect so many times in New Wave action films. In Kung Fu stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You listen out for it.
The only other one I can think of is... one that many people I guess think of is I've heard it in many Sammo films like Eastern Condors, like that echo sound after a fight has sort of ended, like
yeah,
which you know, in the case of Eastern Condors, a certain scene that sort of works, and I don't know if they overused it in other Sammo movies, but it's one of those memorable ones for very obvious reasons, because you know it's not subtle. Supposed to be exclamation marks after it, anyway.
Okay, going on to the plugin tonight. As some people who check out the site regularly may know, hkcuk.co.uk is closing down.
Oh.
Hey, look, our only visitor. Anyway, but we are deciding to basically put the two websites together.
Hey.
So, it's sort of like the puff fish is eating the hack fish. That's the only way I could describe it. So, other websites I could plug now, podcastandfire.com/forum. Look for us.
It looks like yep. Friends here, so.
Well, say goodbye now.
Yep, see you later, lads. Oh yeah, go to greenfandvd.com or any major high street store to get Ninja in Ancient China, released on the 30th of June.
I said cheerio, no plug.
Bye.
bye.
Yeah, exactly.
Goodbye and bye. Something.
Right, so I'm out of here, lads.
True.
Pleasure as usual.
Yep.
See you later, guys.
Bye. Right, so I've not really got any other plugs. Ken?
SoGoodReviews.com, as usual, and also completely unashamedly, we 5 million years after everyone else, SoGood now has a MySpace page, which is done solely for the reason of luring new people in, so I'll get new minions, new devotees to read my stuff. It's basically going to be like a portal for the updates. Basically, I'm not going to do much with it, but it's located at www.myspace.com/sogoodreviews, and there's also going to be promotion for a podcast on fire updates that I deem suitable. Mm-hmm. For example, the podcast on fire 22 finishing the game, that's up there, and Now people probably have moved on to Facebook, but it took me this long to figure out what MySpace actually was and what it was there for. And I'll need an additional 50 years, I guess, to think of what Facebook does. So I have no idea.
Okay, well that's it. I'm Stuart Sutherland.
Ken.
And Mike fucked off. We'll catch you later.
Bye-bye.